Welcome to Studio A at Interlochen Public Radio. I'm Amanda Sewell. If it seems like just last week that we had Viridian Strings in IPR Studio A, that's because it was just last week. The group played a pair of recitals for a piano quintet last weekend, but now they've sent the double bass and pianist on their way and are preparing for a series of recitals this weekend for String Trio. The trio includes founders Joe Skarick, who plays the viola, and Kyle Stocknick, who plays the cello, and they are joined by violinist Nathan Meltzer. Hi, all three of you. Welcome back. Nice to have you.
Thank you for having us.
So, Joe, specifically, I want to ask you about the Mozart divertimento that you all are playing. I looked this up, and it turns out Mozart actually played the viola part at the premiere of this piece. Can you tell that in the music?
Well, absolutely. It's string trio writing in general is more active than a lot of other chamber music involving the viola. And certainly with the Mozart, it's a more substantial piece for this ensemble in general, with it being six movements and taking us through such a big journey. And the viola part has a lot of fun solos. And if you don't have a great solo, you might have a really wonderful accompanying part or counter melody. And it's just always a joy. It's like you're getting to speak with Mozart and you're kind of mad at him because it's very hard, but it's amazing. He never wrote a concerto for the viola, but he wrote this wonderful double concerto for violin and viola, the Sinfonia Concertante, which is also in the same key as the divertimento. So I can't help but think that this key he associated very closely with the viola itself.
Let's hear the first movement of this Mozart divertimento, the Allegro, in E flat major, played in IPR Studio A by Viridian Strings.
Thank you.
The first movement of Mozart's Divertimento in E-flat major for string trio, played in IPR's Studio A by Viridian Strings, which in this instance includes violinist Nathan Meltzer, violist Joe Skerrick, and cellist Kyle Stocknick. They're playing a series of three free recitals in Northern Michigan this week. So I wanted to ask the three of you about something that happened to me at a concert recently, and I was curious how you as musicians respond. I was attending a recital, and at a very quiet part of the piece, somebody's phone started going off. And I mean, it just went and went and went. Like, I was watching it, and it must have gone for 30 seconds while the musicians were playing. And I'm curious, not if, but when that happens, when there's something incredibly disruptive that happens, how do you, as a musician, respond when you're playing?
I think that all of us are really trained professionals at the end of the day. No matter what happens, we usually are able to keep going. Living out in California, I've literally seen people play through an earthquake and hold the piano with their back so it doesn't slide or move around the stage during a chamber music recital. Because one of the stages in the school I went to is designed to actually move if there's an earthquake. So there's nothing gets destroyed. We notice these things. We can hear the little, you know, chatters. We can hear the phones ringing and whatever. But I think at the end of the day, we all look at each other, sync up, and just keep going. Unless something really crazy happens where we have to stop, I think I might have seen a performance stop one time, but that's about it.
Have any of you ever stopped and started over because of a disruption, either together or in other performances?
Only if a string breaks, I would say. I've had to stop.
But that's your own fault.
That's my own fault, exactly. I had a cellist walk off stage when he broke a string and then abandon us while he found a new one for about 5 minutes of us. And we just stood there in front of the audience.
I've done that several times. Great. I've been the string breaker.
Yes, good.
And abandoned my colleagues. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you know, distractions are, or, you know, things happen all the time in every concert. You're never going to, you know, be in a situation where it's like pristine silence. And I honestly, like, you know, composers like John Cage, like, made real points about the fact that, like, what happens in the hall is also part of the music making. And, you know, maybe a phone going off is the least, you know, charming of those those options. But, you know, the audience is what makes, you know, performance possible. And so it's our job to just, like, stay invested in the music. You know, I've been in concerts where the phone goes off, and you just keep, you forget about it as the phrase goes on, because you have more things to think about, yeah. And playing music is hard, and so you don't want to dwell on something going wrong.
What about the rest of us in the audience?
Well, the bottom line too is we're happy people are there. So unfortunately, the more people that are in a hall, I notice it the most at orchestra concerts, where the hall is going to be the most packed. There's just more of those things happening. It just comes with the territory. And if that's the negotiation you have to make, I think we would all gladly take more people that are present to hear the music and some interruptions rather than an empty hall.
You're making me think of a matinee performance of Nutcracker that I went to this last Christmas. And there was probably an 18-month-old with a family behind me. And every time the dancers did something neat, the little one said, "Wow!"
And I mean, that's great.
I thought, yes, wow. But I think with kids, it might be a different.
If they're happy, then we're happy.
I am of the opinion that we should bring back live feedback as.
Yes.
You know, if I make a nice little slide or something, or one of my colleagues makes a nice color, you know, give them some snaps. Give them a little...
like in political debates when they're televised and you have the approval.
That could be fun.
Yeah. Well, I like clapping after movements. I actually do like that. Yeah. It makes you feel validated, unless it's really crazy, but it's usually affirming.
And it sounds like hearing aids can sometimes cause interference.
They can interfere with different electronics in the hall and create a very high-pitched ringing sound that people can hear. And unfortunately, you really never know where the source is coming from and what it's interfering with. So, I mean, I've had it happen to me, and we were about to walk on stage, and then we were kind of put on hold at the most nerve-wracking part of the performing experience, which is right before you walk out. And we had to kind of stand there for, I think, like 10 minutes while they tried to figure out the source, and they never figured it out. So we just had to play with a very high ringing. And after a while, you'd notice it less. And like Kyle was saying, you know, we're trained to keep going and give the audience the best performance we can, no matter the circumstances.
Well, all of us who are here in Studio A today have checked our phones like 7 times during this conversation to make sure that they're muted. Let's talk about this next piece that you're going to play. I do not know this composer. Well, I only know this composer because he's on your program. So thank you for teaching me something new. Tell us about Jean Croix.
Yes, Jean Croix was a naval officer back in the time of like World War I. And he was led a very seafaring life and wrote a lot of music that has this kind of turbulence and churning that kind of keeps piling on top of each other. So we chose the second movement of his string trio that is almost completely the opposite and almost like nothing you've ever heard in this medium. It's kind of a series of unrelated episodes that turn on and off one after another. And then at the end, he somehow tries to put a few of them together before it just fades back into the sea. It kind of begins with this church-like hymn that you might hear in an old, old Gothic cathedral. And then it goes to this kind of peasant song. And then the violin has this wailing solo in the middle that is up and down and really, really crazy and almost like a klezmer feeling or something, and then he slowly returns back to this church organ sound with the violin kind of noodling on these reminiscences of what it was just doing. So it's a really cool movement.
I cannot wait to hear it in Studio A at Interlochen Public Radio. We'll hear Viridian Strings. That's Nathan Meltzer, Kyle Stocknick, and Joe Skerrick.
Thank you.
Kyle, you said that this was not like anything we'd ever heard. And yes, that was, I've never heard anything like what you just played. The part at the beginning where it's like this homophonic part and then the harmony when Nathan's solo, like what even key?
It's amazing.
Is that in?
And he even in like the violin part, he makes up his own key signatures to get these really distinct sounds.
The composer, Jean Craud, not Nathan.
Yes. Yeah.
And we all do
Nathan
that
does
time.
Whatever he wants.
Nathan just follows the score. That's Nathan Meltzer violin with cellist Kyle Stocknick and violist Joe Skerrick in IPR Studio A. That music you just heard was by Jean Craud, which is J-E-A-N-C-R-A-S. I believe that is the first time I have heard music by that composer. I don't even know who to compare the sound to that we just heard. Like, it's
a different kind of style, and it's kind of influenced by other French composers. And around that time, I feel like you start to hear this style come into more effect later into the century with composers like Francais and Poulenc, who actually make these kind of stark comparisons that are almost neo-baroque, neoclassical. And I feel like Jean Craud really was able to start these trends of maybe I can do this really like kind of stark writing in sometimes like satirical ways or really serious ways. And then other composers, I think, really ran even further with his ideas.
Yeah, throughout I was like, oh, I think we're in this sort of tonal area. And then I was like, nope, just kidding. Mm-hmm. We're actually going completely over here, mm-hmm. which is very cool. And I can't wait to hear the whole thing.
Yeah.
And people can hear that string trio by Jean Craud, along with music for string trio by Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart and Sergei Taneyev this weekend. You folks are presenting 3 free recitals this week. Last week's were not free. How do you decide if the recitals will be free or not?
We really strive to continue to reach into new communities all around kind of Northwest Lower Michigan. So our last shows were kind of our big season opening style where we go into our venues we've played a lot and some really new nice venues like the Danos Museum Center. So I kind of did some scouting, I looked around, I found some new venues, talked to people who lived in areas like Elk Rapids, Sutton's Bay, and they were generous enough to donate to Viridian Strings and give us a fee so we could present this recital completely free of charge, saying, hey, we're in your community, we would love if you came to a concert.
And you can attend the string trio version of Viridian Strings free Thursday night at Sacred Heart in Elk Rapids, Friday night at the Sutton's Bay Congregational Church, and Saturday night they'll be back at the Oliver Art Center in Frankfort. Find the details in this Studio A post at classicalipr.org. Kyle, Joe, Nathan, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Jack Connors engineered this edition of Studio A. We had production support from Emma Stadelman and Isabel Lee. I'm Amanda Sewell. Thanks for listening.